very happy to be back and back reading poetry. The first poem I'm going to read is a poem about bad weather, and it's called Foreboding. The seagulls are in from the shore again, airborne scavengers, sounding their foreboding. Over grey capital skies they float, wide enough. It has rained every day for 2 months. A layer of mud swells like a quenched thumb beneath grass too wet to cut. On the screen, Glastonbury is another washout of Wellingtons and ale, while a heat wave burns through southern Europe. Grief is on fire, gorseless and arid. A man takes shelter under a wide-brimmed hat and explains the extent of the damage. House, farm, land, all went up, burned like paper, but for longer. I leave him standing in heat, almost audible, while outside heavy clouds hover over rooftops. The seagulls have retreated. A car alarm sounds in their place as the rain breaks like a spray of bullets in the bloated sky. I get some of my ideas for poems from dreams. So the next poem is one of those poems. It's a bad dream poem. It's called This Is Where. You phone from another country. I can't remember where or why you're calling. I can't hear what you're saying until I soon realize you're explaining yourself, or more specifically, your absence. Then my room becomes another, familiar, yet far from where I should be. A noise keeps coming, a noise that makes me tense my shoulders, as if something is about to fall on either one of us. You crackle on the other end of the line, your voice changing into one that isn't yours. And then your body goes too, from right before me, subdued by the din that is all of a sudden everywhere. What city are you in? I hear myself saying. I almost know. I almost feel the answer rise to my lips, the word that will fix what is broken here. I can't make my mind reach it. I say your name instead, and suddenly you're gone. Quick as a guillotine, the line goes dead, and the silence rings in my ear like a punishment. Up until recently, I lived on Pier Street in Dublin, and if anybody knows that street, you know, it's quite a busy and vibrant street, and my apartment was opposite the local chipper, so it was quite a high of activity. And this next poem is about the goings on that I can see from my window. It's called The Impact. It is late evening when the shouts of local boys and girls begin. Across this city street, they shoot footballs, bottle tops, hot chips from the chip shop, whose steadfast neon light shines opposite my window, more dependable than summer sun. Car horns bleat intermittently, or tires break to a dead halt, and each time I look out, I expect to see somebody flung far from itself, broken to a new form. But the cars only ever move on, trailing coarse words that elicit appreciative roars. As evening darkens and turns the windows of vacant houses black, they gather under the light of a lamppost, blow cigarette smoke in fat rings that grow thin, imperfect halos. As the smoke reaches a bouquet of flowers tied above them on the lamppost, I wonder if they know what misfortune it marks. Though wilting now, I often wake to see them blooming. As they begin to move on, a small boy flicks the butt of his cigarette at the windscreen of an oncoming car, his parting gesture. For a moment, the embers flare magnificently. A cheer goes up in recognition of the boy, his daring, the unexpected beauty of the impact. I'm going to read another street poem, and it's a poem about a piece of graffiti I saw sprayed on a boarded up front of a shop, and it consisted of the single statement, "You're beautiful." So the poem's about watching people's reaction to that statement. Graffiti on the plant store. The words are perfectly formed, silver and gold. They cut through the centre of the boarded up store. Words well worn, yet here this morning I can see people glancing sideways, reading their simple proclamation, wondering if they are the you who is beautiful. A woman carrying a tray of coffee like a bomb slows down as she passes, and watching her readjust to the possibility, I wonder who, in some in-between hour, came out here to disarm us. I wrote the next poem when I was thinking about ideas of legacy and inheritance. It's called "What You Will Leave Me." You place the figure in the centre of the floor, a girl with wrought arms reaching upwards, and tell me this is what you will leave me. You talk of light and space, and move as if you could generate both, though the room stripped bare couldn't hold her bronze proportions, or keep her stillness from being anything other than a reminder of this moment, of this room, of the 2 hours you have travelled with her, bubble wrapped and secured, sure that I will love what you love, sure that I will see in her poise a familiar past, a delicate restitution for the future. The next poem is about travelling abroad with my sister. Mosquitoes. We were travelling into the dust roads and white sands of our imagination. We were spinning maps on the axis of your globe, picking places big enough to hold us both together. Geography was soil and rock until we landed with 2 fingers upon the cartographic shape I knew in name only. Little did we know how the sun would burn every last cord between us, leaving us battling through insect-picked nights for a bigger patch of the sibling world. As you bask in our independence, I hid from a sea that smarted every part of my home-sickened body, as if I were the rock that contained it. As I counted down days of magnetic sun, you swam in from your rage, and casually, as if requesting the time, asked me, "Do you think I am a good person?" I answered honestly, but you took it as truth, and swam back to a sea, a cerulean blue I had never known. And some of the poems in the book are elegies, so I'm going to read one of those, and it's actually another dream poem where you dream about the person who is no longer there. Frequent as the naked dream. Frequent as the naked dream, for I descend into unconcealed panic. No clothes on a people's street, faces full of knowing, you appear. And anything can happen here. Sometimes we talk, conversations we've never had, embraces that feel unsaid. But mostly, we argue ourselves into duplicate rage until I wake, bundled like strewn clothes, awaiting the return of my body in a world where you are not and where I never forget to dress. I'm going to read the title poem of the collection before you. It was all crimson or black anyway. Eyes opened or closed, it looked good out there. When things were still, beyond reach, and no one had come to warn you of your potential. Like you were wood or stone, waiting to be something made from wood or stone. And the sun didn't need to be fixed to a certain height or lowered to a specific point for you to be happy. It was glamorous too, in the pre-end of the stage, when you had gathered yourself to yourself as if you were love or simply something warmer than your own skin. The air was breathable then, it took from you and was returned unblemished, and with that, life was in the wings, beating a silent drum before you, telling you this and this and this. At the summer before last, I walked the Camino de Santiago, so from France up into northern Spain. Foolishly, I walked it in the Jubilee year, and also in July, so it was over 40 degrees. I have the type of skin that would sunburn in the dark, so it wasn't the wisest decision. But I would leave really early in the morning and then arrive in my next destination after walking 20 or 30 kilometres. And eventually I would arrive at the siesta hour, so it was just like walking into an abandoned town. And the next goal was about that experience. Siesta. When this place sleeps, it sleeps without you, nurturing a body you cannot see. Long into the afternoon, the quiet marks you as a stranger. These streets, brick red and worn, tell you you must earn your healing, as though reprieve is not for you. Here, the sun needs something to burn itself into. Today it is you, and your tired skin knows there is no shade cool enough to calm these hours when you live as though it is your shadow that has cast you, narrowing itself like the eye of a needle to the point where the day leaves you unsung and moored. I wrote the next poem about the cockle picking tragedy that took place in Morecambe Bay in 2004, where 23 Chinese immigrants tragically lost their lives. Cockle picker, Morecambe Bay. You watch the rain bury itself deep into the bed of the ocean. The sea rose and dipped. Butterfly waves, unsettling the working day, masking the creeping tide. You went out into the shallow water, sought the heart-shaped shells, lifted them as if catching currency and not the sea itself. You made the familiar line, a bearing in a chain, your outline cast against the blackness of the waves. But the sea, deceived, took back its wares and cut you off like a door slammed tight and bolted. You fell in with the tide, became scattered in your soul-stricken panic, struggled from your clothes, clung to nothing, felt the swell of suffocation, the blood explosion, bursting, gave yourself up, naked, horror, your body brimming full but was seen. I think one of the nice things about living in a temperate climate like Ireland is that you get to experience the seasons changing. And the next poem is about that change and how you often find yourself changing with them. It's called Permafrost. Darkness brings us full fear and becomes a sleeping kiss. A warm softness to it, the remnants of a bitter winter, when the violent bearing of colour becomes the season's refrain, and dead wood burns in place of candles in the open-mouthed fire. The fruitless time for us begins amidst the strictures of change. Our domestic fires, the height of things, or should we burn the seasons into a cacophony of flames until the leaf-drenched lanes become brittle and crack under the pressure of our resistance. Like this, we bring another year across an invisible line and readjust once more to save ourselves from the black permafrost. I'm going to read two poems. Next, one that I wrote in the aftermath of the tsunami and earthquake in Japan, and one that I wrote about the earthquake in Haiti. First one's called A House on the Ocean. Half submerged, a house floats on the ocean. Its roof and second story protrude from the surface. A curious island of brick and glass, supported now by the unsteady sea, the wreck of its contents scattered where alone could be, shook and shot about like an abandoned building lot. Will the sea bear its inhabitants home, or do they already lie adrift on Pummel's land, inconsolable as this ruthless house, still looking like it could keep the outside out? Rubble. Take this house from my body, brick from my bones. There's my foot under yours. Take it. It will make you rich. Wrap me in your heroic sheet. Cover your face. I'm decomposed. Carry me out. See how I fit inside. How my spine curves to these dirty threads. Oh, you can hardly make me out. Oh, make me out. Prose me, poem me. Put flesh on these blanketed bones. Bundled, compare me to the stork's gift. Oh, call me rubble. The earth has done worse. Loot me. Lyric me. Pick at my bones. The second part of the book is about the poet, the American poet Elizabeth Bishop, and the poem came about after I was reading her letters, so they're inspired by incidents in her life or things that she noted in her letters or that turn a phrase. And I'm going to read two of the poems from a sequence called Accidents. 1. The year revolves again, habitual as a ring inscribed and turned round your finger, circular and forward as the face of a clock, dumb to repetition, its own Sisyphean rock. January brings in the old feeling, anchors the blood, which is all the body can renew. Something in the cell says yes when our mouths say no. The onward push, foot to the floor of existence. An upward glance, the typewriter key sticks again, spitefully spoiling the rhythm. The cells go on, so who is to blame for this awful business of living? two. The sun balloons in the sky, growing colder. Through the window, the air still feels like summer. The water in the bay, still a blue that promises warmth, though the sun that lights your room is changing. Boston leaves hang on like flames, resisting extinction. Soon they will plow, fall towards the earth, make themselves over, just as the body that sustains you gives way to the carnival taking place inside your brain, the inaudible crescendo. Or do you hear it, that final giving in, when the blood vessel breaks, all life, all memory too. The next poem is about a city, or the association you can have with people and cities. And no matter how many times you visit a particular city, you always think of the person you first visited it with. Berlin. Without the maps of our known lives, we feel our way through others' histories, seeing neither past nor present. As we move among our imaginings of how people here live, glimpse in half-opened, heavy doorways, the beginnings of a life, I can't cast off the feeling that we are marring this city for each other, etching ourselves onto its already parred walls, leaving togetherness in everything we touch, so that we stay framed in subterranean windows, wearing this city as a scar we cannot yet see nor heal. I read a lot of biographies of writers and artists, and I wrote the next poem after reading biography of Frida Kahlo. It was also the first poem I had published in 2007. It's called In Paint. Against pain I steady the canvas, a mountainous metal space. With oil keys I enter, defiant I go to the glass. A flower burnt in a Mexican sun, I watch, no, observe my stillness. I do not see beyond skin while taking measurements with my fingertips, unsympathetic receptors. The first touch of paint sets the tone, restrained, meticulous, no gorging on the unconscious here. Despite what they say, I am a realist, depicting only my experience, daily lived in magenta, sorrowful green, maddening yellow, fictions to accompany the fictions, despite what I say. I drink from a murky glass, swirl tea, at times tequila, cut my own hair, think I am more beautiful than the women I share my husband with, as if he were a vast piece of fruit, quartered and passed around a thirsty room. I perform loneliness well, but am in fact happier alone, with only my dog to kick out from under me, away from the paint and the brushes abandoned like words waiting to be finished. In this room, I am the only speaker. Again and again, I dress myself in paint. My hands knuckled like a knotted rope, seduce me to my own end, and persuasion is not needed. Like a moon beginning, I unveil myself with a half smile. In a fading monthly light, metal becomes mirror. I'm going to read two more of the sad poems. And the first one is called Winter Coat. Your winter coat hangs inside my wardrobe, an object memory I cannot trust. Though it hasn't kept your body warm in years, been trudged through rain, or rot by wind, the kind that animates dead leaves. It retains your shape, like the cindered frame of a fire log. Past meaning, it is out of season, and holds nothing I can touch, except a strand of hair woven to the collar, a remainder that marks only absence, as it glistens still on this coat that is no longer coat. Naples. We took pictures in the Piazza Garibaldi, three of us then, pressed together and newly framed by what we knew about the present. We walked to the sea. The bay, arched and blue, revealed itself like a trick of the mind, mirroring our weak old selves. Looking back to Capri, to its rubble sand, to Vesuvius, calm and sated, I thought this is the distance we have travelled without you. This is the earth's irreproachable response to your absence. And I'm going to finish on a slightly lighter note. If anyone has ever had the experience of going out for dinner with somebody and they just keep looking over your shoulder at what's happening behind you. So it's a poem about that. Eating out. Consumed by a couple, you sit in silence. You interrupt me just to point out how this particular pair eat without speaking. She, head downcast, attends to the task of picking white fish from its springy bone. He stabs at his food, as if puncturing the air between them, while you, dissatisfied, almost hurt yourself, looking past me for explanations. There's something wrong here, you say, not to me, but to the scene unfolding mutely behind me, as if you should get up and fix it, as if they're not talking to something they have forgotten, something they have left behind, so you can call after them, half embarrassed by your heroism, and disrupt their do not disturb alliance, while I sit, appetiteless, reading the menu like a page turner. Thank you very much.